Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. It's Thursday, the 2nd of July, and this is episode 12 of the Kike Podcast 2020 with me, Will Evans.
And me, Ben Eagle. We went international on the podcast last week with a call to Nico Mouton in New Zealand, and we're sticking with the international theme this week, although this time we're heading across the pond to the US. We'll be taking a look at the United States market, the impact of Corona, and their recent aid package, the global impact of this, and of course, what this all means for British dairy. To do this, we're really pleased to be joined by Eric Mayer, president of US-based dairy consultancy High Ground Dairy, Kite's managing partner, John Allen, and as always, everyone's favourite dairy market analyst, Chris Waltland. Welcome to the show, everyone, and particular thanks to Eric for joining us, especially with the time difference. I know it's quite early in the morning there.
Morning.
Okay, before we turn to the American focus of today's show, let's stay in the UK, Europe with Chris. Can you give us your weekly market update, please?
Well, after today, I fear I will be everyone's second favourite market analyst after Eric. As everyone who listens to this podcast will know, I only make it look as if I know stuff. Eric actually does know stuff. So my veneer will shortly fade and I'll become a busted flush of an analyst in comparison, I think. But as far as the markets are concerned, I think it's been a bit of an ordinary week. To be honest, there's been no GDT auction, so pillow talk with a wife has been a bit light. But fortunately, EU butter prices have increased on the listings, so it's not as if we haven't had anything to talk about last thing at night. Butter prices were up again on the official listings, but they've only really been playing catch up to the real market, which have been higher. Cream prices in the UK, they've been pretty static. Cream's over 140 still, butter about 3,100. They're okay prices, but not enough to result in milk price increases, which is why we've seen some of the mid-tier companies make their whole decisions for August prices. Last week, I likened the butter market to an adventurous toddler ignoring all the warnings of the fundamentals and said he was going to take a tumble. Well, the butter futures have tumbled. They've dropped about $85 over the next 6 months. They're still around the 3.5 euro level. So I think we'll take that. And together with skim powder, they'll deliver a 27p farm gate milk price. So not brilliant, not terrible. Skim milk powder's gone into a bit of a reverse. It's not by much. I'd say it was it's been a bit like an old scraper tractor trying to climb a hill. You know, it's got to the top and the driver needs to change gear, but he slipped the clutch and it's slipping back down again. So next week we'll find out if it's got any tread on the tyres and how wet the ground is. But it may get a bit of grip, it may slip back further. But I still think EU prices are higher than those in the US, Eric. I think you're cheaper on the world market. So we've got to watch that because the EU really needs to export skim powder and be competitive on that world stage. Whey had a bit of a rally in May, but lost ground again. It really can't decide which direction to take. So I can't see much movement in cheese prices, although South Carnarvon Creameries has increased for August, while a couple of UK or GB English ones, rather, Barbers and First Milk have held. So the Dragon brand is showing the way forward. So I think that's about it. I'll go on mute, pass over to Eric and sulk as his superior knowledge and intellect shows up my rank amateurism. So over to the States and over to Professor Eric.
Thank you very much, Chris. Let's turn to our main subject for the day, the impact of Corona on the US market. Eric, thank you so much for joining us. Can you start by explaining, give us some context and explain the context of how COVID-19 impacted the US dairy sector during the earlier days of the pandemic and how the market responded?
Absolutely. Good afternoon to everyone over across the pond. And Chris, as always, thank you so much for that colorful introduction. I will do my best to to explain what's happening over here, but I will preface this and say, as we were starting to kind of lock down here in the United States, we thought we had a good idea of what was to come here, looking back at the at a previous time in 2008, 2009, when the dairy market here in the U.S. as well as around the globe went into that recession mode and prices went into multi-year lows. And so early on, we thought we had this pegged. But we also predicated that by telling people we've never traded or analyzed markets or dealt with markets through a pandemic before. So it's anyone's guess as to what may come. And boy, were we scarily right as to how things have turned out here in the U.S. after dealing with this for the past few months. But looking back into what happened during the early days of COVID-19, as cases started to build here in the United States and the economy shut down, we had almost within a week's time, state by state, closing down, businesses shutting down, people going home and staying home from work, basically a national quarantine. And so demand for dairy products, particularly in the food service sector, moved sharply lower. And in some segments of the food service economy, travel, leisure, entertainment, sporting events, I mean, we basically went down to zero. Here in the U.S., we are an eating out nation. And it's widely believed that of the breakdown between food service and or eating out versus eating at home was largely in the 50% or even more than 50% of the time people are consuming their food outside of the home versus in the home. And so this dramatic decline in food service demand seized orders up at the processor level almost immediately, where we heard some horror stories of trucks that were coming to pick up product from plants around the country being turned away. And so we saw a very quick decrease in demand from that food service sector. However, as people were dealing with this, and I'm sure this happened around the world as well in different regions, people flocked to the store and bought what they could. And so here in the United States, we bought up as much food as we could to stock up because we didn't know what was going on. And of course, the funny stories about shortages, I mean, certainly in disinfectant wipes and hand sanitizer, but also toilet paper was also a very hot commodity in the grocery stores here in the States. So we did see a surge in retail demand, and schools came off. And so there was a lot of uncommitted raw material or milk, raw milk, that needed a place to go. And so the headlines that came out of the United States at the end of March and in early April was that milk was being dumped at the farm level or at the processor level in record amounts. And as a result of that, we saw, and a result of supply pulling back, we saw cooperatives start to mandate or basically just not pay their producers on the final 5 to 10, or even in some cases, 20% of the milk that they had made in March, that they weren't going to pay them. And so they asked for a almost a mandatory supply reduction from the farm-based side. And that was the first time we've ever seen anything like that, where an immediate impact on restricting supply because of that sharp decrease in the demand side to try and balance out the supply-demand balance in this country. So farmers complied with that by and large. And by mid-April, our price, and I'll use a reference price for cheese. We're a cheese-driven country here. And so the price of cheese during the height of the retail panic buying in mid-March, we got as high as about $1.87 per pound. And by mid-April, our market had fallen to 20-year lows to $1 per pound, levels that we haven't seen since the bear market of 2000. And so farms pulled back supply as co-ops mandated them to. Other other processors in our country decided to export product. And so got very aggressive on moving product overseas. And so export deals were cut for the remainder of the second quarter and even into the July, August timeframe, just to try and move some of that product along. And that kind of happened in the mid-April timeframe, booking export for May, June, and July. Well, all of a sudden, we had less milk. We had food service demand low. Retail demand has been very strong. So one of the positives here is over the past generation, year after year, our fluid milk demand has fallen precipitously. And as a result of this pandemic, as people were locked down at home, demand for fluid milk on the retail side has been quite strong. Food service, come early May, started to figure out their models. Different economies, different states had reopened earlier than some. Others figured out the curbside or takeaway service and adjusted their models. And we saw a resurgence in restaurant demand. Well, over that past month, as restaurants didn't really know how to forecast what their demand was going to be, whittled down their inventories at the distributor level to almost zero. And so when their demand started to come back, and as they started to see prices rise as a result of some government bids, and we'll get into that because it's such a great impact on where our markets are today, they started making very large purchases, two, three, even four times their weekly purchases. And so demand for dairy products from retail, from export, from food service, and then an unprecedented $1 billion announcement for a food box program. Basically, processors here in the U.S. working with food banks around the country to quickly put together dairy product boxes to distribute to people out of work and in need. All of that demand hit at the exact same time in mid-May. And so our price has gone from that $1.87 per pound pre-COVID pandemic to $1 per pound in mid-April to just a month later, that price doubling. And now here, as of yesterday's settlement at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the price of cheddar cheese is $2.64 a pound. That's 164% above those lows. Our milk prices have more than doubled, and our farmers are quite happy. And they're getting even more aid on top of that with direct payments that have gotten into their bank accounts at the end of last month that basically made them whole on milk that was dumped in late March and into early April. So just a dramatic change, unprecedented volatility in the dairy markets from extraordinary lows to all-time highs within weeks.
John, have you got anything to say about
that? Wow, that's what a description there. Thanks, Eric. I mean, and there's so many similarities with a lot of what happened in the UK and the EU, I guess, as well, which is interesting. But I suppose I'm intrigued, Eric, because this sounds wonderful in terms of what the US dairy farmers have got. And I'm sure UK dairy farmers would have loved to have had the support that your guys are now getting. $1 billion. Wow. And I gather this morning there's another nearly $300 million going to be chucked at dairy. So, you know, I mean, they're things that you can only dream of. But my concern is politicians interfering with markets. It usually ends in tears. So how do you see that? Because that's my concern, is that I see falling grain prices in the States. I see a falling soya prices, good prospects in the harvest from what our experts are telling us. So actually, you've got all the recipe for farmers making lots of milk in the States in the second half of this year. How do you see that?
Yeah, we agree. And we've been, obviously, our jaws have dropped to the floor with the viciousness of the rally here. There's a saying in the U.S., it applies to equities as well. Our stock market seems to be soaring, even though tens of millions of people are out of work, is you can't fight the federal government injecting capital into markets. And so the dairy market here in the U.S. has benefited greatly from this surge of demand, largely government bid. Not only do we have a food box program that has that will have injected $1 billion into the marketplace, and the announcement that came out last evening here in the States more or less outlined what percentage of that $1 billion was going to be allocated. During the first 6 weeks of that program, they injected $317 million into dairy product purchases. And now over the coming 2 months here, July and August, there's another $288 million that's being pushed. In yet another bucket, $120 million of dairy product purchases in the form of fluid milk, cheese, different cheeses, and butter are going to be purchased between the August and November timeframe. So that's another pool of money that they're pulling from. And then, of course, I believe the dairy market was poised to receive $3 billion in direct aid, checks totaling up to $750,000 per farm, which is $250,000 per partner of that of each individual farm, depending on the size. So that's the maximum amount that's allowable. But those numbers make farmers whole. So they've been told to cut back, and they did. May milk production was down 1%. It's been years since we've had a milk production number that has turned negative. But all of the cards are aligning for farmers to make more milk. They've been quickly made whole by their government for any lost revenue that was generated in the March and April timeframe. We were just coming out of a bull market to begin with at the end of last year. Farmer profitability here was great coming into the late third and fourth quarter last year. So we still are poised to make a lot of milk here. And while the forward curve is inverted, every futures price on the board that a farmer can lock in against grain prices, even though the grain prices have started to move up here a bit with an acreage number that was a little bullish, everything points to profitability for farmers going out into next year. And so once the party of what we call helicopter money, just money dropping from the sky to support the dairy industry, at some point we're going to run out of cash, and farmers won't be as important anymore. And perhaps that will be, maybe this lasts through the election. Farmers are supporters of the current administration. They've been given lots of direct aid, even during the China trade war. Maybe this lasts for a while. But when that party ends, we're highly likely, in our opinion, to have potentially dealt with a second wave of the pandemic. We don't have a good treatment option here. We have record cases now, which is just such a surprise after where we've been over the last 2 months in this country. And we'll likely be in a recession, which tends to provide less dairy demand in the United States. And given where our prices are for dairy products here, as soon as as Uncle Sam stops making purchases here, we are quite nervous that things could roll over and prices could move back below long-term averages. And so that's what we fear. But we thought that recession-type economy would have occurred by now, and we just continue to see piles of money come into the market here. And even commercial demand up until this point has been quite strong as the food service sector restocks their pipeline, which is a big pipeline to fill. And the retail demand, with so many people still at home, has still been quite strong.
Eric, what's the feeling of US farmers on the ground right now? Are they optimistic? Are they concerned?
Well, I think they're just appreciating the ride and the fact that they were seeing. I mean, at one point by the end of March, for about a 4 week period, things looked quite dire, and there was nervousness that a pretty good chunk of the dairy market would fall apart and farmers would be out of business en masse. And one of the reasons that became even such a harder thing is that our meat, the beef industry, also suffered from a very high COVID count and shut down processing capacity around the country. So even if a farmer wanted to sell their cows for cash to at least generate some cash, they didn't have an outlet to do so because the culling market had plummeted as well. So this rapid increase makes people on the ground feel a lot better. They're poised to make a lot more milk. And a conversation I've had with a few dairy farmers that, in particular, those that utilize the risk management tools at the futures market and have hedged. And so those dire prices in April and May that were given to farmers, those that had hedged a month or two prior had locked in very profitable levels. In addition to the market rallying back so quickly and them getting direct aid, they said, well, we're either going to buy more cows or we're going to buy a holiday home to go to the beach with. So farmers are feeling quite confident right now, but they do realize that the long-term prospects here are not as good. The one thing that our farmers have is we have a lot of tools to manage the potential downturn here. Not only do they have the futures and options markets at the exchange, they also have other insurance tools that are subsidized by our government to be able to lock in these or protect these profitable prices. So right now, it's kind of a just everyone is just shocked by how swiftly the volatility has kicked in. And I think what we've tried to do is tell them as quickly as it came up, it could also fall just as quickly. And so things look great right now. But when when Big Brother stops fueling this this purchase program, things could change quite quickly.
Wow. Eric, how long will this aid package be in place for, and how long will the federal government be prepared to keep extra funding going?
We do know that the money and the funds could be stopped if the national emergency declaration or proclamation gets rescinded, although with the COVID case counts, that's likely not going to happen. We anticipate that when the USDA is given money, they will spend it. So it's not it should not be any surprise to anyone that they will continue spending it at least through the election, potentially through the end of this year. I will never doubt the fact that this administration will throw any amount of money, which is just so surprising, as a Republican administration tends to shy away from large government. But in the case of supporting farmers, this administration has just opened up their pocketbooks and spent as much money as possible. So we officially cannot make any predictions about what's going to happen here down the road, but we would anticipate that A, they will spend the money that's in their budget and that they've already allocated, and B, don't be surprised if they force more in if there's another lockdown here and they feel like they need to spend it. We're also very interested in understanding, we have the direct aid to citizens in this country out of work. They've been granted an extra $600 per week. That temporary unemployment insurance expansion ends at the end of this coming month. Will it be expanded? Is there enough money? Is there enough support with Congress to push through yet another aid package? We've spent trillions so far. At this point, what's another handful of trillion dollars to keep the market afloat, especially to kind of garner support? Our children and grandchildren will pay for this, but if the goal of the government was to support farmers and help feed families during this crisis, they have wildly succeeded in that program, causing some problems, long-term issues down the road, disrupting commercial demand during times when food service demand, restaurant demand is still struggling. Businesses just trying to pick up the pieces from the last few months, they're paying record levels for dairy products. It's just almost unthinkable.
John, what does all of this mean for UK farmers? Why is it important for us here in the UK to pay attention to what's happening across the pond?
I hate to say it, listening to Eric, great summation, but it sounds like it's all going to end in tears, because Eric, you know, as outlined, you know, this is politics, isn't it? Interfering with government, markets. And for whatever reasons, whether it's feeding the population or getting re-elected, this is actually going to create a lot more dairy into the world market. And I can't see, and Chris can comment, I can't see this really helping world dairy prices at all. And who would have forecast this? But who forecast COVID? And as Eric has said, nobody knows how it's all going to end. But it doesn't look good to me.
What about for UK farmers, John?
Well, I just think the knock-on effects, you just hope that actually, in terms of the UK, I mean, let's be fair, I mean, the markets have probably reacted, have recovered better than we expected back at the beginning of May, as Eric said. And I mean, you know, we were hoping for stability. And I mean, you know, each week Chris comes on and gives a fairly positive, upbeat message, you know, and actually the prices have recovered and they weren't bad. You know, I mean, it wasn't good, let's be honest. You know, everybody would want more, but, you know, everybody was probably pretty happy that the markets were relatively imbalanced. You get news like this, and I think it's very concerning. I can't have any other words than to be very concerned. Sorry.
The only thing that I think from the U.S. side is that our high prices create opportunities for export from other regions around the world. And the longer our government keeps our price up, the more the world sees the U.S. as a challenging player that provides inconsistent and volatile prices. So we've always been kind of the third wheel when it comes to export. And while our lobbyist groups have tried really hard to establish relationships around the world, this type of intervention in the markets would, and we've been isolationist too with our trade policy. It's just another reason for the world market to shy away from the United States as a long-term partner. And so that's unfortunate that we'll be more of a fly-by-night opportunistic place to do business than anything else.
Intriguing. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. But think out the box, John. You know, when the EU-UK negotiations go to hell in the handcart, we'll be the 51st state of the United States. So on their Eastern Front. So there might be huge opportunities there, John.
Chris, now you're the sort of guy I love to have around, a half glass full guy. And if Trump will adopt us and make us the 51st state and give us the aid as well, I think our farmers, I'm not sure what they'll think actually in reality.
They'll love it with big money following.
Right. All we have time for, sadly, today, but many, many thanks to Eric Meyer so early in the morning to speak to us, to John Allen and Chris Walkland for coming on the show today.
Yes, thanks, Eric. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks also to everyone who's been listening today. If you found us on Twitter, please give this episode a retweet so that other members of Team Dairy can find us and get involved with the show. We'll look forward to you joining us again next week. But for now, it's goodbye from Will, me, and all of us here. And we'll see you next time on the Kite Podcast 2020.